Waukesha started the year on a high note. After years of study and applications, Waukesha had taken a major step toward tapping into Lake Michigan to replace the city's radium-tainted well water. The Great Lakes governors had approved the plan. Then, early in 2017, a consortium of U.S. and Canadian mayors tried to stop the diversion. Waukesha won that battle, and the city made a final decision on how it would obtain its new water supply. Waukesha had been slated to purchase and pipe water from Oak Creek, but in late October, leaders changed course and announced a deal with the city of Milwaukee. As the announcement was made, Mayor Tom Barrett admitted that previous attempts at negotiating a deal had been bumpy.
What you had was you did have a policy disagreement, and it was an honest policy disagreement that, fortunately, the leadership in Waukesha and the leadership in Milwaukee never allowed to cloud our main focus. How can we do right by our residents?
Despite progress, much work remains before Waukesha residents begin to drink Lake Michigan water. Right now, planners are puzzling out exactly where the pipelines will fall. Meanwhile, Milwaukee faced its own drinking water challenges in 2017. The city had long been sharing the message that people living in homes built prior to 1951 were at higher risk of lead exposure in water. The reason? Those older homes likely have lead service lines. The city initially said about 70,000 households were affected. Then last February, city leaders discovered that as many as 10,000 more homes might be on the list. The health department had just set a Lead Safe Milwaukee campaign in motion. It folds in risks both posed by water and paint. Before the campaign launch, the department had also been distributing free water filters with the help of community partners. But a group called the Fresh Water for Life Action Coalition called on leaders to scale up efforts. Robert Miranda is founder of the organization.
Asking the city to begin alerting the public in regards to this concern, begin directing the Milwaukee Water Works to contact water consumers of the city and alert them of the fact that they may have lead pipes. In that contact, provide information that will help them determine if they have lead pipes or not.
In nearly the same breath, another local organization took up the lead issue from a different angle. With representatives from the U.S. Department of Agriculture standing by, Hunger Task Force held a press conference focusing on nutrition. Executive Director Sherry Tussler says kids are better protected from absorbing lead if their diets include vitamin-rich food.
State and local agencies all came together and they agreed that well-fed means less lead and that we can advance this cause in a reasonable way in our community.
The two groups kept up their call for action throughout the year. In response, in late November, the Common Council passed a resolution. It reinforces the importance of informing the public about filtering water to reduce the risk of exposure and testing young children for possible lead poisoning. In years to come, the city will need to tackle the long-range challenge of replacing tens of thousands of lead laterals. The Milwaukee Department of Public Works reported crews will have replaced 600 lines by the end of 2017. Concerns about green space also wove in and out of 2017, including the vast acres managed by Milwaukee County. In Wauwatosa, heated debate remains over the future of a bit of woods, affectionately called Sanctuary Woods. The parcel is surrounded by the ever-expanding research and medical complex that includes children's and Frederick hospitals. At one of several meetings this year, Wauwatosa resident Deb Fowler made the case to preserve the 22-acre parcel.
Because we have lost so much of the county grounds, what remains is an oak savanna, some incredible spring ephemerals, a pond with frogs and many species, and it's the last remaining spot.
But Wauwatosa Mayor Kathy Eli insisted public concern is unfounded.
It is my belief that at the end of this planning process, we will have a plan that provides a framework to both protect and conserve beloved green space, as well as provide opportunities and guide decisions that foster economic development, job creation, and added value.
Eli's perspective could be applied to debates at the state level this year. In November, the Republican-controlled legislature passed a bill to end Wisconsin's so-called mining moratorium. For the last two decades, companies hoping to mine for minerals such as gold or copper were required to prove they had already run a non-polluting mine. People pushing for the change argued the bill would allow companies to open job-creating mines more easily. Spooner resident Casey Aronson made his case at a hearing in September. He's a heavy equipment operator and said he would be eager to take one of those jobs.
Not only give us a place to work, but give our children an opportunity to work and live in northern Wisconsin rather than watching them leave to seek employment elsewhere. I love the great outdoors. I, too, want to preserve and protect our land, but I believe that we can safely and responsibly mine our land without harming the environment.
Perhaps no other piece of legislation in 2017 garnered more attention than the Foxconn bill. The sweeping document folded in $3 billion in tax incentives for the Taiwanese manufacturer. It also offered exemptions from environmental permits and DNR oversight as the company builds a huge LCD screen plant in Racine County. During the debate, Jennifer Giegridge with the League of Conservation Voters cited a bundle of concerns. They included the public's inability to weigh in on the gigantic campus's impacts to air and water. Under the bill, Foxconn can offset the impact of disturbing wetlands by building wetlands somewhere else. Giegridge was aghast.
They're literally what filters our drinking water. So any rainwater that comes off a parking lot or comes off a farm field, a wetland is what clears that out before it goes into the groundwater. It's also the major source of flooding protection.
Conservation groups weren't alone in raising concerns. So were Democratic and some Republican lawmakers, including Representative Bob Culp of Stratford. He says his constituents have questions. Culp turned to DNR Deputy Secretary Kurt Thiede for answers.
So let me just kind of cut to the chase. Will the DNR be continuing to monitoring things through the construction process? And when the construction process and the plant is in full operation, will those residents in that area have clean water and clean air?
There's nothing in this bill that rolls back any of the air construction permits that are going to be necessary, air monitoring requirements that are going to be in place, and the standards that are associated with those permits, the stormwater requirements, the waste requirements, and how that's managed.
As Foxconn prepares to break ground in Racine County, critics are likely to once again voice their concerns about the plant's impacts. In recent weeks, lawmakers began debating another bill that would impact Wisconsin's wetlands. State Senator Roger Roth authored a proposal to free up certain wetlands for development. About 80% of the state's wetlands are connected to surface water, such as rivers and lakes, and are regulated by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Roth says the bill simply makes better use of the remaining 20% that adds up to about 1 million acres. He says that developers would still be required to improve or create wetlands somewhere else.
This bill doesn't destroy wetland. This doesn't reduce the amount of wetland here in Wisconsin. This is just streamlining that permitting process, and at the end of the day, there will be no net loss of wetlands here in Wisconsin.
On December 21st, a long queue of people testified for and against the bill. One of the opponents was George Meyer, a former DNR secretary and current head of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation. He says some of the wetland areas that would be folded into the bill are important ecologically and environmentally. Meyer urged state legislators to form a work group composed of both developers and conservation groups to look at wetlands and proposed projects individually rather than unilaterally removing protection.
There is a willingness by these groups to solve the wetland regulatory issues, but sportsmen and women are united that any such proposal has to be carefully constructed so as not to open the floodgates for loss of the vast majority of non-federal wetlands, which provide valuable habitat, water quality protection, and ever more critical flood damage relief.
We've barely scratched the surface of the environmental issues that were in the news over the last 12 months. You can check out all of our coverage by visiting wuwm.com/environment and follow us in 2018.